Hello everyone, and welcome to the BC Ministry of Finance's Budget 2017 Consultation Telephone Town Hall for Northern BC. We are live tonight with your Minister of Finance, Michael DeYoung. In addition, we're also joined by thousands of residents from across Northern BC listening in. To ask a question live this evening, you have the opportunity to do so by simply pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. Once again, if you have a question about the budget we want to hear from you, press 3 at any time to ask that question. My name is Eric, and I'll be the moderator of the town hall this evening. Now, during this live virtual town hall, we do encourage you to get involved and to ask some questions and give your opinion by voting on a few polling questions that we'll have for you. Minister DeYoung chose this format as it is an interactive town hall with you, which means he wants to hear from you. We want to hear your feedback and opinions and have an open dialogue and discussion with you and fellow residents as the government undertakes preparations for Budget 2017. The government of BC is committed to maintaining a balanced budget that reflects the values and priorities of the province's population. Tonight, our intention is to get as many questions and comments about the budget as possible. You can ask questions at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. Someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. Now again, for everyone just joining us, hello and welcome to the British Columbia Ministry of Finance's Budget 2017 Consultation Telephone Town Hall for Northern BC. We are live tonight with your Minister of Finance, Michael DeYoung, and in addition, we're joined by thousands of residents from across Northern BC listening in. We want to remind everyone that you can ask a question at any time by pressing 3 on your phone's keypad. We'll be doing a couple of polling questions over the course of the evening. You'll have a chance to vote live on those questions as they come up. Now, this time I'm going to introduce Minister Michael DeYoung so we can open up the town hall and start taking questions. Minister DeYoung, welcome. Tonight is the first of many telephone town halls that you'll be holding throughout British Columbia to increase public consultation and engage residents regarding the province's upcoming budget. Last year saw the province have one of the fastest growing economies in Canada, and BC wants to build on this success by connecting with families from throughout the province to hear what their priorities and concerns are. Now, at the moment, it seems we have many thousands of people joining us from throughout Northern BC. Minister, please go ahead.
Eric, thanks. Thanks for hosting tonight, and a particular big hello to British Columbians from across the province, particularly the northern parts of BC. It's 2017. My, where has the time gone? Happy New Year. It's budget time, and I guess most importantly, folks, it's your money. I was talking to someone earlier today who kept asking me questions about the budget and what we were going to do with the government's money, and I kept pointing out it's not the government's money, it's your money, and you work awfully hard to make it, and then we ask you to send a little bit of it via taxes to Victoria, and of course other levels of government do the same thing. So we're finalizing your budget, trying to make some decisions about how to spend your money. I made one resolution at New Year's, and that was when we did the town halls, I was going to try and keep my comments as short as possible and try to get to as many of your questions. This is your opportunity to provide views, advice, and pose some questions. I will say this. We are pretty fortunate in British Columbia. We're the only province in Canada with a AAA credit rating, the only one regularly posting budget surpluses, balanced budgets to be sure, but budget surpluses. February will be the fifth consecutive balanced budget for British Columbia. No other province has even come close. In fact, many provinces are posting huge multi-billion dollar operating deficits, which is really just a form of deferred taxation that future generations are going to have to pay off. So we led the country in growth last year, this year. We believe we're well positioned to do so again in the year ahead. But we've got some decisions to make. We've made progress paying down debt. We've done so at the same time that we've invested significant billions of dollars, in fact, in infrastructure, roads, hospitals, schools. We're also trying to make strategic investments to maintain our momentum in terms of growth and job creation. We led the country in job creation. Our unemployment levels are well below the national average. Now, having said all that, doesn't mean there aren't some challenges. And some of you are listening from parts of British Columbia that are facing some of those challenges, whether it's energy pricing and a downturn in exploration investment, the forest sector, which has done very well of late, but is now facing the forces of protectionism in the U.S., and the possibility, the very strong possibility of a protectionist countervail duty, another round of softwood lumber disputes with our American friends. So we've got to be alive to these challenges. We've got to continue, in my view, to be careful to protect your money and ensure that we stay on the positive side of the ledger. But we do have more room for decisions than any other province in Canada right now. And that's where I am interested in seeking your views and providing you with an opportunity to pose some questions and pose some thoughts for discussion by friends and neighbors that are participating. So thanks for taking time. It's a Monday night, and I'm not sure if it's the hockey game or the football game that we've interrupted or some other activity in your household, but I'm very grateful that you're taking the time to participate with us. And Eric, my guess is that there are some questions waiting.
Minister, you are correct. We do have our first live question ready to go. Quickly, I want to remind everyone listening in that if you have a live question, you can ask it at any time by pressing 3. So for any budget-related questions, we want to hear from you. Press 3 on your phone's keypad over the course of the town hall. At any time, you can do so. Someone will take your name and place you in the question queue. We're going to our first live question coming from Ed from Quesnel, who has a question about medical insurance.
Hello.
Hello, Ed. Calling from Quesnel.
Hello. Yeah, I'm from Quesnel. I'm wondering why the province of British Columbia is the only province in Canada that has to pay medical premiums.
I guess the short answer, Ed, is because we spend $18 billion this year on healthcare, on delivering healthcare services, and we collect about between $2 and $2.5 billion in medical services plan premiums. So the bottom line is the money ultimately has to come from somewhere, but we do have some choices about how we can collect that money. And it sounds like you would prefer that we collect it a different way. I don't know if you're still on the line, Ed, but I'm interested to know whether you have a preference for a different means of collecting the money that we need to finance our public health care system.
Well, that's why we elect you guys to figure that out. My question is, why is British Columbia the only province in Canada? The other provinces must have it figured out.
Well, the other provinces, Ed, have got income taxes that are way higher than ours, and don't often want to talk about that. We've got the lowest income tax, but we do have, for an individual, a $75 a month charge. Now, about 1 million British Columbians don't pay it, those that are lower income British Columbians. Have you got one option, I suppose, is to move it into the income tax system. Ed, would you favor that? Might have lost Ed off the line, Eric. But Ed, thanks for the call, and thanks for highlighting the issue.
Ed, thank you very much for that question. We're going to go to another live question. Now, this one's going to be from Brian from Prince George, who has a question about housing. Brian, you're live on the line. Please go ahead.
Good evening, Minister.
Hi, Brian.
How are you?
Excellent. Thanks for joining us today.
No, I've been frustrated for forever in regards to housing and the cost of housing and the hardships it's causing many, many people. I don't know. Seems to me the real estate folks have sort of got us over a barrel here. I know the government is subsidizing somewhat a down payment, but the cost of housing is resulting in many folks being poor because of the cost of living in their places, and denying them opportunities for their families, for themselves, to take part in society fully as they could or might be able to. It seems to me there's an opportunity for government to get more involved in regulating what's happening out there in the housing world.
Brian, are you seeing evidence of that in and around Prince George as well?
Well, you know, I get frustrated every time there's a, you know, the market says houses are increasing in value, it's going to cost you more this year to buy a house than last year. And subsequent to that, the next year, houses are more expensive, and people aren't, the good-paying jobs aren't there anymore. People are digging deeper to survive. It's frustrating.
So, Brian, here's your chance, and you're right. You sort of accurately identified some of the things that we've tried to do to address that question. There's no question. Housing prices virtually across BC and in some parts to an even greater extent have gone up, in some cases gone up fairly dramatically. We've tried to take steps for first-time home buyers to assist them in foregoing property transfer taxes. We've added a tax at the higher end. We've added the 15% tax on foreign purchasers, which quite frankly was intended to try and disincent some of that demand that we were seeing from outside of Canada and outside of BC. You've mentioned the assistance that we've provided up to $37,000 in the event of the home ownership partnership program. Any other thoughts the government should do?
Somehow get involved. Take this thing by the reins and pull it in somehow. I'm not a politician or sophisticated in that regard, but somehow you got to get your nose into the business make things affordable. We've got this younger generation. How are they going to buy a house? I don't know. It's beyond me. I know many young people are living at home longer and, living with their parents. And so I think it's a crisis. I like government to have a good hard look at what's going on out there, who's benefiting and who's not. And certainly it's not the average citizen.
Well, it's certainly the average homeowner because, of course, the value of their home has gone up dramatically. Those that own a home, your point, which I don't disagree with, is for many people, there is that challenge associated with getting into the market. Last thing I'll say, Brian, then I guess Eric's going to ask me to move on, is as long as, I'm not an economist, but I actually subscribe to that old adage, at the end of the day, price is largely the result of supply and demand. And in our case, and I say this happily, people want to come here. The economy has been performing well. Job creation has been solid. So we've got people coming here, and demand has outstripped supply. And I think part of the answer, and this may be what you were suggesting when you said government's got to get in there, is we've got to remove, in my view, the impediments to having more housing built, and more affordable housing built. And when I hear that approvals in some parts of BC are taking 3, 4, and 5 years, I don't think that's good enough. And we've all got to work together to try and get more housing on the market quicker, because the demand is there. And as long as demand is outstripping supply, then prices are going to go up. Eric?
Brian, thank you very much for that question. We're actually going to do a survey question on this topic. So for everyone joining us on the line, if you have a, you can use your touchtone phone to indicate your response to this polling question. Is the BC government doing enough to address housing affordability in British Columbia? Yeah, if you would say yes, press 1. If not, press 2. And if you're unsure, press 3. So again, is the BC government doing enough to address housing affordability in British Columbia? For yes, press 1. For no, press 2. If you're unsure, press 3. Now we have another live question. This one's coming from Nicola from Smithers, who has a question about another question about medical services, the medical services premium.
Hello, Nicola.
Good evening, Mr. DeYoung. Minister DeYoung, good evening.
How are things in Smithers? Lots of snow on Hudson Bay Mountain?
We actually don't have much snow considered compared to the lower mainland.
Yeah, how about that for a change? We had a pretty white Christmas.
Yeah, we barely had a white Christmas, but I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to participate in the town hall conversation tonight.
Not at all, and thank you for joining.
You've addressed this question on the first caller this evening about British Columbia being the only province in Canada that charges a medical services plan premium. And I'd like to know if the funds go directly into a medical services budget or does it go into general revenue?
Nicola, good question, and I'll try to answer it as straightforwardly as I can. I mean, all of the funds come into the consolidated revenue fund, but they're all spent on health care because the health care budget is $18 billion, and every nickel that is collected from MSP, which is, as I said, about between 2 and 2.5 million, it's a very small fraction of what we actually spend on health care. And this year we're going to spend another $500 million more on health care than we spent last year. So, Nicola, can you tell me what is the biggest frustration you have about the MSP premium, which generally is for a person $75, twice that for a family, but people, lower income people, pay less. What frustrates or angers you most about MSP?
What frustrates me the most is that I don't have a doctor. I have no access to a family doctor. There are no walk-in clinics. When I get sick, I have to go to the emergency room. So I feel like I'm paying for a service that's not being provided.
I understand. It's less about the... It's more about the level of service than it is about the fee itself.
Services, I'd like to be able to access them and use them.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, the point of entry for most of us to the our publicly funded medical health system is our family physician. What's the and is that the situation up in Smithers? Tough to find a family physician that's taking on new patients?
I lived in Prince George, and I waited 2 years before I could get a family physician. I lived in Terrace. I did manage to secure a physician there. And then I moved to Smithers 2 years ago, and in 2 years I've not been able to secure a family physician. The one that I had when I lived here previously will not accept me back as a patient. There are no doctors in this town that are accepting patients, and they're not even accepting a wait list.
That's a challenge. Similar, I won't ask about your specific family circumstances, but is that for families with kids, same sort of scenario?
It's the same scenario in Houston, Telqua, and Smithers. Smithers is the center for medical services for many outlying communities, and there's young families with pregnant wives that do not have a regular doctor, and it's concerning.
Fair to say, Nicola, that with respect to health care, which is a big priority for you, you would say the government should work with health authorities and try to focus in on physician recruitment for more rural parts of BC?
That's correct, and we may have to look at other options, whether we could have a physician come to town a week, a month, and just have them rotate through so that they can pick up on patients that aren't being able to receive medical care. Start a walk-in clinic, and if need be, bring doctors in from out of town just to do a rotation or something.
Not a perfect solution, but it would be a start. Nicola, thanks for taking time to stay on the line and tell me about what you're facing in Smithers.
Thank you so much, Minister DeYoung.
Good night. Eric?
Nicola, thank you very much for that question. We have our next live question. Quickly, I want to remind everyone, if you have a budget-related question, we want to hear from you. Press 3 on your phone's keypad at any time. We're going to go to Vince from Prince George, who has a question about the budget and some of the hurdles in the budget. Vince, you're live on the line. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Hey, Vince. How are things in Prince George?
They're going good. They're going good. So this is really cool, and I want to thank you guys for being able to engage the community like this and raise some awareness.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, it's a big province, and it's hard to get out and talk to everyone face to face. But this is a great way to give people an opportunity. It's great for me. It's great for me, just as you've heard over the past number of calls, to get some specific examples of what people are facing and where their priorities are. So.
Yeah. So. That's really cool. I'll go on to my question, keep it quick. And I was wondering, what do you think would be the greatest outcome of the budget, and what would be the greatest hurdle to face with that?
Gee, there's a good question. I mean, I start with a belief that Premier Clark and Shirley Bond and Mike Morris and others share that, you know, our first obligation to you is to be responsible with your money and not spend more of it than we receive. So that underlies the balanced budget approach. Thereafter, given the relative success that we have had in terms of economic growth and job creation, I'd like to identify those areas where, you know, people are facing the most pressure. And we've heard some of that already today. This evening from some of the calls. We heard Nicola earlier talking about the problems that challenges she's facing just trying to get a family physician. So, and then there are people who, you know, through no fault of their own are facing really challenging circumstances, making sure that the support is there, helping people who want to get trained, who want to get education so that they can get out there into the workforce. Those are all areas that we'd like to focus in on. Vince, then you asked, you know, what am I worried about? I'm worried about all the people we trade with elsewhere in Canada, elsewhere in North America, and elsewhere in the world, because we are a trading province. Our economic performance and our standard of living is tied to that trade, absolutely. And if our customers start to falter, or, in the case of the U.S., start to erect trade barriers that preclude us from trading with them in the way that we have, that is going to visit in a very negative way upon us. So to the extent that you will continue to hear me articulate a cautious approach to our budgeting process, it's because it has served us well over the last number of years, but also because I am worried about what I am seeing internationally and what I am hearing south of the border from protectionists.
Vince, thank you very much for that question. Now, we have another live question coming up in a second. I quickly want to remind everyone, if you have a live question, we do want to hear from you. Press 3 at any time for a budget-related question that you have. We're going now to Pamela for a question. Pamela is from Logan Lake and has a question about people with fixed incomes. Pamela, you're joining us live.
Yes. My question is, cost of living has become astronomical recently, and anybody that's on a fixed income, either from pensions or if they're on disability or anything like that, they're really struggling to make ends meet.
Pamela, thanks for calling in from Logan Lake. I'm sure you got lots of snow up there at the moment.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, I'll bet. Can you tell me more when you talk about the cost of living? And I get what you're saying, Pamela. Nothing's going down in price. Things tend to go up. I mean, inflation is pretty low right now, but in a bunch of other areas, you know, we see prices going up, not down. Where do you see that? Where do you see that most particularly from your perspective in Logan Lake?
Like the cost of groceries, for example, is one place where, you know, I mean, like a loaf of bread can be as much as like $4 for a loaf of bread. Milk has gone up. Everything, all of the groceries have gone up. Anybody that's, you know, on the welfare system, I don't know how those poor people make ends meet because, you know, it's no wonder they're eating unhealthy foods because they can't afford the healthy food because it's so expensive. And myself, I'm on a pension. I've retired. And the pensions don't go up. Basically, they're stagnant where they are. And so you're living on the same income you were making 5 years ago, but your cost of living is way higher than it was 5 years ago. So you're just going further and further and further, you know, down is getting worse and worse.
Getting tougher and tougher. So, Pamela, it sounds like a couple of things that I take from your observation is for those people that are sort of making do with the least, government should look at maybe trying to provide a little more to them, and also in those areas where government is collecting fees, charges from people, if we can provide some relief there, that would be helpful to you.
Like one aspect that I find a little odd is even the family bonus where they have for children, they have a higher rate for the children that are under six. So to me, like once the children are teenagers, they eat you out of house and home. And like at 6 years old, it's not like when they turn seven, they can look after themselves. So you've got a lesser cost. So I don't understand the logic of having it where you have more for a child that's under six.
No question, the cost of raising kids isn't going down either. It's going up as well. We've tried to provide some additional support there as well, Pamela. But I take it you would set that as a priority as well in terms of providing some additional assistance to families that are trying to raise kids. And I'm certainly not going to argue that point. I am going to thank you very much though for taking time to stay on the line and participate in this tonight. Thanks for calling in from Logan Lake.
You're welcome.
We have another live question ready to go. Now, this one's going to be from Dana from Telqua, who has a question about healthcare allocation for funding. Dana, you're live online. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Dana. Hello? How are you?
Telqua. I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding the healthcare funding you're talking about. You said $18 billion is spent in BC on healthcare versus $2.5 collected from people who are paying their premiums. And I have a question about the allocation of those funds. That's an awful lot of money. And like the one lady said, I live in the Smithers and Talqua region, and I'm very familiar with Burns Lake. And no, you cannot get a family doctor. And the people need them, and it's a bit ridiculous. And I look at the Burns Lake Hospital, 13 rooms, and you can get an X-ray, and you can go to the emergency room. But if you're injured or if you need to have a child or have a bone set, then you're sent to Smithers or Prince George. And if you're familiar with the roads in this country, that seems a little bit ridiculous. And I'm wondering how much of that $18 billion was spent on the Burns Lake Hospital to no avail.
Well, you're right about this, Dana. It is a huge swack of your money. I mean, roughly 42, 43 cents of every dollar you send to the provincial government is turned around and plowed into the healthcare system. We've had, we've been having a little bit of an argument with the federal government around the level of contribution that they are making, not successfully as yet, I might add. But yeah, it's a lot of money. You know, Burns Lake, the new facility that is being constructed, under construction there. I mean, the $18 billion is just the operating part of the budget, and we spend billions more building new hospitals. And I can go through a whole list of ones that have been built over the last dozen years right across British Columbia. But they're now, they used to cost, you know, $50 million, $75 million, now they cost $300 million, $500 million, $1 billion plus for these new hospitals. And that's, you know, how is it spent? It's spent on hospitals. It's spent on doctors. It's spent on nurses, nurse practitioners, all of the technologists that we rely upon, respiratory therapists, radiologists. It's spent on drugs, pharmaceutical products that are getting more expensive, not less expensive. And I guess, Data, the only thing I'd say is one of the reasons we continuously and Minister Terry Lake and others continue to explore different ways of doing things, like using more nurse practitioners, is because of that escalating cost and the desire to ensure that there are services available for people as close to home as possible. We got, you know, a multitude of more cancer treatment centers across BC than we did 10 or 15 years ago. But it is horrifically expensive, and you're quite correct to pose the question on a continuous basis. How is that $18 billion being allocated, and are we getting value for the money? We try to do it as fairly and equitably as possible, and we try to get the best results for people, but I believe there is always room for improvement. Dana, thanks for calling in from Telqua.
Okay.
Dana, thank you again for that question. Now, quickly, on this subject, we have a polling question I'm going to read. So for everyone joining us online, you can indicate your response using your touchtone phone. Health expenses make up about 40% of the provincial budget. Do you think that is the right level of funding? If yes, press 1. If you say no, it's too little, press 2. If you say no, it's too much, press 3. If you're unsure, press 4. So again, health expenses make up about 40% of the provincial budget. Do you think that is the right level of funding? If yes, press 1. If no, and it's too little, press 2. If not, and it's too much, press 3. And if you're unsure, press 4. Now we're going to go to another live question. This one is going to be from Valerie from Burns Lake. Valerie, you're joining us live on the line. I believe, Valerie, that you have a question. Valerie, you're joining us live on the line. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello, Valerie.
Hi, Valerie. You're joining us live on the line. All right, Valerie, we'll try and get to you in just a second, but we do have another live question ready to go. This one's going to be from Chris. Chris has a question about class sizes in schools, and he is also from Burns Lake. Chris, you're joining us live. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Chris, thanks for joining. Love you folks up in Burns Lake. You always get involved, so thanks for doing that.
Yeah, well, it's cold up here right now, so it's we're thinking about schools and driving on the roads, like the one caller said. My daughter just went into kindergarten for the first time, and so it got me thinking a little bit more about education again. And I heard some, haven't been following it too close, but class sizes, and there was just a Supreme Court case somebody was telling me about that for class sizes, and I was kind of curious why that would be such a fight, because education is for me now is such a critical thing for any government, any country. It seems that if we put more of our dollars into good education, it just benefits the whole society. And you know, I'd certainly rather try and spend pay more of my portion of MSP if we could get some more dollars going to class sizes and stuff.
Chris, stay on the line for a minute, because you've actually done something that I applaud you for, because you've actually cottoned on to the budget. It might sound mysterious, but it really is ultimately about choices. And you've talked about one of the choices. I used to be the health minister a number of years ago, and I used to go around the province, Chris, and I was in Burns Lake and up and down the Highway 16 corridor, and I'd ask people as health minister, what do you think the most important thing government does? What is the most important thing the government does? And I think people, sometimes they want to be polite and they say, oh, it must be health care. And I would say to them, actually, even though I'm the health minister, I think the most important thing government does is education. Because the better educated we are, the better we look after ourselves and the healthier we are. So I agree 500% with your observation about the importance of education. I can give you some good news that there's already been discussions between the BC Teachers Federation and the government folks that has led to an additional $50 million, I think it's $50 million, in the hiring of immediate hiring of some additional teachers for in the classroom. It's only a first step. There will be more beyond that. Is there anything else you can tell me, though, Chris, about, I don't know if your daughter, for example, was able to get into a Strong Start program before kindergarten or during kindergarten, but any other observations you've been able to make through this important time in your child's life?
Yeah, we did. We did Mother Goose and we did Strong Start, and they're both excellent programs. And you know, you could go in there and participate with your child, and very positive settings. And going into kindergarten too, and you can go in there. The teacher's amazing, the Decker Lake Elementary School. And but there's a lot of kids, and there's some special needs kids in there too, which I think is a great, it's really the diversity that my daughter's going to be exposed to is fantastic. But there's, there's needs to be more teacher's aides and things like that. But I think the whole thing is really awesome. But I think it just gets to a critical point with those class sizes and to where the teachers just can't cope, right? It's just chaos, at times.
Chris, I first of all, I applaud you for clearly having taken time to get involved with your child and participate in programs like Strong Start. Yeah, the final thing I'll say before I guess we're going to have to move on, but you're right. In terms of class size, it's not just the number of students, but it's the composition of that class and the pressure that puts on the hardworking women and men that we ask to do the most important job of all, which is educating our children. So thanks for participating, Chris. Thanks for highlighting your priority. It's pretty helpful for me. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
We have another live question ready to go. For everyone joining us, if you have any budget-related questions, we want to hear from you. Press 3 on your phone's keypad. We're going now to Alva from Prince George for a question about roads and highways. Alva, you're joining us live. Please go ahead.
Oh, Happy New Year, Mr. Young.
Well, Happy New Year to you. Did you have a good New Year's Day in Prince George?
Oh, yeah, I sat back and watched the stuff on TV and watched things outside. We had a pretty good time with the family and the kids.
Yeah, good for you. Bravo.
Yeah.
Highways, you got some ideas?
Well, I've been a first aider for a long time, and I've seen some pretty horrific things on our roadways up around here. I know you've traveled some of our roads up here, and the long distances between cities and towns are up here.
I sure have.
A lot of our roads are narrow and winding and long distances. I hate bringing up the incident in Burns Lake, but the people there who had to be transported by land along that Highway 16 West, it took a long time for those poor people to get to medical aid.
Right.
Here in Prince George or in Calgary. So I was hoping, I see lots of improvements in the lower mainland and improvements down there, and I'm hoping that our road systems up here can be widened and improved as well, not just for health and safety, but also for economic driver.
You're right.
Move our products along the roadway.
It's about both. It is certainly a safety issue, but it also... better access means better opportunities. If you were going to tell me, and I was going to talk to Transportation Minister Todd Stone tomorrow, what would you say the biggest priority is? Is it the sort of Caribou Connector? Is it out towards Quesnel? Is it out along Highway 16? What would you identify as the number one priority for improvement based on your experience and your work?
Well, my experience has been Highway 16 West. It is being improved, but it's only being sections improved to a 3-lane instead of 4-lane. There's narrow sections. Here in Prince George, a young lady lost her life at the bottom of Peden Hill at an intersection. And I consider that, at the bottom of that Peden Hill, to be a very dangerous situation. And a truck's gone through that light, lost its brakes, a chip truck, and ended up in Boston Pizza's front porch. And we've
I know the intersection you're talking about.
The intersection of Highway 16 West, right by Boston Pizza here, and the bottom of Peden Hill.
Right.
There's a intersection there that you come down that long winding hill, and you have to make a stop right at the bottom. And I've watched people in the wintertime both going up or coming down, and the accidents that's happening at that intersection.
So what's the answer to that? I recall the intersection. What's the is it a longer run up, or how do you fix that?
Well, I think it'd be better if it had built that section of that hill coming down there, to put an underpass under that, and then put the highway going straight over and no turn off, lights there. To save lives and save economics and everything. But all our roads up here, you know, it's long distances between everything, and widening and putting in better barriers and identification for the motoring traffic of everybody would be more economic to the province of BC.
And it'll certainly improve safety on the roads as well. Listen, thanks very much for participating from Prince George tonight. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Alva, thank you very much for that question. We're going to go directly to another one. Now, this one's coming from Mike from Prince George, who has a question about offset taxes. Mike, you're joining us live online. Please go ahead.
Oh, good evening. First off, hats off to you for doing this. I was almost going to hang up the phone because it sounded like a survey pitch question or something like that. But this is actually quite informative, so hats off to you for doing it.
Well, Mike, thank you, because I know you've probably been on the line for about 45 minutes now, so hats off to you for sticking with it.
Well, I've invested this much time. I'm going to get my question in. First off, you got to make sure you give the gears to your moderator Josh there for ruining Quesnel's name earlier on.
I think he's probably listening in, and we won't let him forget it.
Unless he just moved here 5 days ago, but that's, I'll give him that benefit of the doubt. But yeah, you got to give him a geography book tomorrow.
Yeah, don't worry, we're on it.
But anyway, yeah, so slight give him the gears on that one. But I had this is a kind of a minor issue. I thought it was something that would could be beneficial in a couple of ways. I pitched it to my local MLA here, Mike Morris. Didn't get the courtesy of even an acknowledgement that I sent it in. And admittedly, it's minor, it's small potatoes, but why don't you put a couple of dollars tax on cigarettes in addition to what's already on there? I'm sure it's quite high, but specifically to fund the portion of forest fires that have a cigarette butt component to it. There's no way it's going to cover any of the, you know, the even a small percentage of the cost. But just as a, as a show that is a cost of that product.
Well, it probably goes a little further than that, Mike. It goes a little further than that because for 4 or 5 years I was the forest minister, and as you know, the cost associated, well, the cost in terms of damage to property and occasionally the loss of life associated from forest fires is tremendous, but the amount we spend now is regularly in the $300 to $400 million a year, and the vast majority of fires, even today, are human caused. Yes, some are caused by lightning strikes, but the vast majority are human caused, and you've mentioned one of the culprits. Your specific question, or observation, or suggestion, which I am drawn to. I'll tell you the challenge around cigarette taxes, and I have to rely to a certain extent on advice that I'm given. We have some of the highest cigarette taxes in the country. We also have the lowest smoking rate, I'm happy to say, and we'd like to drive it even lower because that's why we have some of the best health outcomes in the country. The challenge, I'm told, is at a certain point, if cigarette taxes get too far out of sync with neighboring jurisdictions, for us that would be Alberta, Saskatchewan, Washington State, you start to encounter a real smuggling problem. And they've Yep. been through that down east. So I'm drawn to the suggestion. The only caveat I want to attach, Mike, to your idea is we've got to be a little careful that we don't find ourselves too far out of sync with other jurisdictions or that whole issue of smuggling, which happens, I'm sure, now. It seems to be at manageable levels, and the enforcement agencies detect it and deal with it. But that's really the big consideration. And for anyone that's participating and listening, and a reminder that if you need products to help you quit smoking, they're available free of charge from the health industry. So
I'll make it one more suggestion, and then this will get you headlines, if not in North America, around the world. And you, Jen, you talked about the issue of smuggling. Well, why not just outright ban smoking and swap, not that I'm a proponent, but you swap marijuana for tobacco, and that'll cut down on that issue, hopefully, of the cigarette causing fires, and then it'll increase some health outcomes too. It'll
like
never happen, of course, but it'll get you instant worldwide recognition.
I'll tell you this, if we could drive the smoking rate down from where it is now, I think around 13%, if we could drive it down even to 10%, the cost savings in healthcare alone and the improvements to lifestyle and health outcomes would be huge. Mike, thanks for participating, for calling in from Prince George, and I think I'm going to be up in Prince George in a few weeks thereabouts, so maybe I'll see you when I'm up there. Thanks for calling
in. Very good. We'll work on that cigarette bill.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, bye-bye.
We have another live question coming up in just a second. Quickly, we're going to do another survey question. So for everyone joining us on the line, you can use your touchtone phone to indicate your response on this question. BC has led the country in economic growth over the last 2 years and is expected to be among the top performers in 2017. Do you see evidence of this growth in your community? If yes, press 1. If not, press 2. And if you're unsure, press 3. So again, BC has led the country in economic growth over the last 2 years and is expected to be among the top performers in 2017. Do you see evidence of this growth in your community? If yes, press 1. If no, press 2. And if you're unsure, press 3. Now we have another live question. This one's coming from Kathy. Kathy's from Fort Nelson and has a question about balancing the budget. Kathy, you're joining us live. Please go ahead.
Hi, Happy New Year, everyone. Everyone across the province, I hope this is one of our best years yet. Mr. DeJong, I am from a very small town up in northern British Columbia. I'm sure you're very familiar with us. We were put on the map with our gas exploration up here. My question to you, Mr. DeJong, is you are interested in balancing the budget.
I am indeed, Kathy. Hello. Happy New Year to you.
I don't know what's going on with my phone here. Thank you for taking my call. I am from Fort Nelson. I have been a resident of Fort Nelson now for the past 6 years. My question to you, Mr. DeJong, you speak, I mean, we've heard from people all across the province in regards to the cost of health care, the availability of medical professionals in our community. I mean, I could go on and on and on about the fact that we cannot have a baby in our community. We do have some of the greatest doctors, I think, in our province up here, but we have, you know, pregnant moms driving down the Alaska Highway to have their babies. We have been affected by forest fire here. All the concerns that have been brought forward to the table are very valid ones, I believe. But my question to you, Mr. DeJong, is British Columbia, to my knowledge, does not have the same income this year as they have in years past. As you know, we have no more gas exploration up in Fort Nelson, and we have no diversified economy. We don't have any other industry up here. So my question to you, sir, is if you are balancing the budget, are you going to have enough income to be able to be spending the same amount of money that you have been in previous years? And if you don't, how are we going to balance the budget without a sufficient income?
Kathy, it's an excellent question because it really speaks to the fact that we have a variety of different economies and regional economies in BC. And you know, I don't want to BS you. There's no question activity in the gas fields is down. And we see that in terms of royalties. We see that in terms of the sales of drilling rights. And by the way, you know this. It's why we have worked so hard to find a different outlet and a different market for our gas off our continental North America. North America is awash in gas. And we cannot rely on the markets, the traditional markets, in Canada and the United States, which is why we're developing the LNG sector to begin moving gas from your part of BC to markets in Asia. And happily, we've seen the first smaller investment decisions go ahead, but we're anxiously awaiting the larger, major ones that we've been working so hard on. Now, how are we going to balance the budget in those circumstances? We're able to do so because, and in fact, we're collecting more revenues this year, and we'll expect to collect more revenues this year than last, because other parts of the BC economy are performing reasonably well, and other trade-related activities are performing reasonably well. Whether it's aerospace, whether it's the construction sector, the technology sector. Now, Kathy, for for you and the great folks up in Fort Nelson, that's pretty thin gruel because not a lot of that is visiting upon the gas fields and the energy sector right now. We're hoping we can change that. But the short answer to your question is I believe British Columbians should have a great deal of pride in two aspects of our economy. One, how diversified it is across the province, and two, the fact that we have diversified our markets. We are not as dependent on the United States as virtually every other province. We have diversified our customers around the world. And those are the two reasons, I believe, coupled with the ingenuity and entrepreneurial spirit of British Columbians, that we have been leading the country economically. But we've got to get on, and we've got to be successful in terms of developing the LNG sector. And Kathy and folks in Fort Nelson know precisely why that is important, because we've got a product. We developed that product better than any other place in the world in a environmentally responsible and sustainable way, and we need to get that product to customers around the world. Kathy, thanks for calling in from Fort Nelson.
Thank you, Kathy, again. We're going to go to another live question. This one is from Alfred from Smithers, who has a question about the Free Trade Forestry Agreement. Alfred, you're joining us live.
Hello.
Alfred, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about the free trade. Is there any progress in that regard? According to Prime Minister Trudeau, they didn't sound too concerned about the free trade agreement, and I don't know if I buy that. That's pretty easy talk. But is there any progress that you've seen or heard or been involved in that can help us industry-based economies here in northern B.C.? Especially with
Alfred, I want to be really, really upfront with you. I'm concerned.
Yeah, me too.
I'm concerned. The first test for this is going to be softwood lumber, and we've already seen the protectionist lobby ramp up in the U.S. And quite frankly, in a week or two, there's going to be a new administration in place, and I want to wait and see what happens, but it's not like President-elect Trump has been the spokesperson for free trade agreements. And so I'm worried. I'm worried that we're going to see the Department of Commerce, the trade representative in Washington, impose a significant countervail duty. I will say this, Alfred. That follows on what I was saying to Kathy a few moments ago. We're not as dependent on the U.S. market as we once were. We developed our industry developed markets in China, and I see potential in places like India. But the U.S. is still our biggest market. They're our neighbor and our closest ally. And protectionism out of the U.S. is bad news for us. And so I am hopeful, and Premier Clark is advocating strongly with Prime Minister Trudeau to make this a priority in his initial discussions with President Trump. But I don't want to, I don't want to mislead you. I am worried that there are tough days ahead for us in terms of protectionism from the U.S.
Trump, the way he's coming together here, like he's kind of hot and cold, and he talked one way when he was running for president, and now he's talking another way, so it's hard to get a fix on the way he is actually going to tackle this. So hopefully he's pretty willing to work with us.
Well, hopefully, Alfred, I'll say this, and then I think Eric's going to oblige me to move on. But, we talk about, and I do, about the importance of trade with the U.S. for Canadians and British Columbians. But, there are tens of millions of Americans. In fact, the number I saw was upwards of 20 million Americans who rely on trade with Canada for their jobs. And I am hopeful that someone begins to speak for those people, because protectionism will exact a price on both sides of the border, and both countries are going to be better off if we find ways to increase our trade with one another and our cross-border investment as opposed to the opposite. But, Alfred, all the best up in Smithers. Probably a little bit of snow on the way at some point, and next time I'm up there, maybe I'll see you. Thanks for hanging in there and participating tonight.
Yep, thanks for taking my call. Bye now.
Alfred, thank you again for that question. Now, Minister DeYoung, we had a lot of really good questions this evening. Before we wrap up, is there anything you'd like to add?
Only this, Eric, and that is to say thank you, to acknowledge that there are probably some folks on the line who had equally excellent questions that didn't get a chance to ask them. I think in a moment you're going to provide folks with some alternative means to get those questions to me and those suggestions, which I welcome. But I just want to pay tribute to folks right across BC who took an hour out of their evenings, kept the phone up to their ear, and participated. You know, democracy is not always perfect, but it is a participation sport. And tonight, thousands of British Columbians participated, helpful to me, and helpful to the province. So thanks, and everyone have a good evening and a great 2017.
Thank you, Minister DeYoung. For everyone still on the line, we do want to hear your feedback and opinions about the 2017 budget. There are a few ways you can share your input. Some of them are you can go to www.engage.gov.bc.ca/budget2017. Once again, you can share your input by going to www.engage.gov.bc.ca/budget2017. You can email us at fin.minister@gov.bc.ca. Again, fin.minister@gov.bc.ca. Or give us a call at 250-387-3751. Again, 250-387-3751. Thank you again to everyone for joining us this evening, and hopefully you have a great night.